Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazzy Lambray, and I'm joined by my brother, my partner, friend of the show, man. Damn near the third Woke Bro, if we're being honest. Ben Burgess, what's going on, brother?
I take that as a huge compliment. I am good, man. How have you been?
I'm good, man. Last time I saw you, we was at Barry Weiss's Palooza. Yeah. Really cool event with Anna from Red Scare, Grimes. I forget the other two chicks' names. They were great, though. Thoroughly enjoyed them.
Louise Perry and Sarah Hader.
Sarah Hader, sorry, I didn't remember the two celebrities, the two non-celebrities, but shouts to them. Great after party, great atmosphere, just a cool event. I look forward to going to the next Free Press event because they know how to throw a party. They put a good production on. The comedian kicked ass too.
Oh yeah, what was his name?
The gay homie, I forget his name, but he was incredible. Of course, LA Times poo-pooed it, just completely clueless and just ridiculous. But
it's so stupid. I read that article and it's like what they were describing. It's like, look, there are things that like some of those people said that's like, you know, I could give you my like critique.
Yeah, a great argument against it for sure.
You know, but like, you know, this was just such lazy like lib writing. You know, it's like, you know, it's just like, oh, you know, that person could have written that article without even going.
Yeah, and also it's a weird thing to shit on where it's like, yo, LA Times, why don't y'all throw something like this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're the fucking LA Times. Like, whatever. Anyway, on today's show, our guy Nando Vila is hobnobbing with the elites in Spain right now, drinking all kinds of Spanish wines, having all kinds of tapas. So he can't join us today. However, we got a great show in store because just some incredible news since our last Woke Bros. We missed last week, but Ibrahim Kenji X had to let a lot of people go from the Anti-Racial Institute or whatever that shit is called over at BC. Yeah, BC. BU, not prestigious enough for Ibrahim Kenji. Just want to talk about the fallout from that. Just the sort of discourse that was happening around that dude at the peak of 2021, 2020, you know, racial reckoning hysteria that we had, and the sort of fallout from that, these annoying ass shortcuts that we try to take in society. Mm. Whatever, we'll get into that at some point. But first, man, fresh off the presses, you just wrote a new article in Jacobin Mag. It's titled, Gavin Newsom Keeps Throwing Workers Under the Self-Driving Bus. It's about all of these anti-worker legislation that Gavin Newsom is pushing through, all of these pro-worker legislations that he's vetoing in his capacity as governor of the state, the liberal state of California, democratically controlled, up and down the goddamn coast, Ben. It's the Dems putting their thumb on the scale. You would think it would be just a liberal, progressive utopia with all that democratic machine power.
Yeah,
that we would just be seeing all these gains for workers, Ben.
Yeah,
clearly that should be the case, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of, it's like Thomas Frank, you know, made this point back in, he wrote this great book called Listen Liberal, where it's like the Democrats' excuse is always like, look, what can we do, right? You know, it's not, sure, you know, maybe you wish that like Biden would do more before, you wish that Obama would do more, but it's just these damn Republicans, you know, they can't you know, can't do anything with the Republicans getting in the way. And look, obviously there's some truth to that, but like it's real telling that in California Democrats run everything, like the you know, Newsom's obviously a Dem, both chambers of the state legislature, obviously, you know, run by the Dems. So this is really a good test case. Well, is it really the case that it's just like the only problem is the Republicans? And, you know, if the...
You can't make that argument.
No, you can't. I really think like Newsom is kind of the living embodiment of, just this like super grating kind of like American liberalism, where, you know, the first time I wrote about him for Jacobin was 2 years ago. He'd just done two things back to back. One of them was he made a big point of adding like an ethnic studies requirement for high school graduation, but then he also vetoed this big expansion of financial aid that would have helped community college students in California. So it's like, you know, it was just the perfect, like, oh, hey, you do this performative identity politics thing, but then when you have a chance to help the, by the way, disproportionately non-white population of community college students, then no, sorry, it costs too much money. Back then, my suggested headline on that article, which Big and Dave vetoed, was, Gavin Newsom's a piece of shit. I guess that's going too far even for a Jacobin headline. But like the stuff that I'm writing about for this one is like within like a week, like just this very small amount of time, like late September, Newsom vetoes this bill that was passed overwhelmingly, right, by the state legislature that would have banned self-driving like trucks from California highways if they didn't have like a safety operator on board, which of course one is going to eliminate thousands of jobs, you know, like making it legal for them to do.
Just a quick question before, because we already, like, it's obvious why it's bad for workers. Yeah. I'm like,
it's also bad for anybody who's on the highway,
right? 100%. We know that. But again, just for the listeners who just, you know, who might not understand how that law might work, it's just, it's pretty simple. It's straightforward. There would be workers on the self-driving bus, meaning people who needed to be paid to monitor what was happening with the bus, even if they were not on the bus. These are thousands of workers and jobs that would be lost. Now, I remember that prop, whatever it was with Uber, when clearly
Prop 22
with Uber, we understood what the stakes were for these guys to be full-time employees, get bennies, get reimbursements, get all these things that any normal employee, which is what they are for fucking Uber, would get. But the Uber side was like, no, but workers, they love flexibility. They love making their own hours. They don't want a real steady paying job that pays a livable wage that they could run a nice little crib and take their kids out to eat every now and again. Workers don't want that. They want flexibility because they're going to be entrepreneurs one day, Ben. Everybody knows that. That was sort of the counter argument, which we obviously knew was bullshit. What's the counter argument for this? Is there, or have they even bothered to put one together?
Not much. I mean, I think on the self-driving cars and trucks thing, I think that that's, you know, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're just that sure that it's safe without it, then you say, oh, well, let's not stand in the way of, you know, technological progress
Jesus Christ.
But like, but that one was pretty bad.
How are people still making that argument, by the way?
Yeah, well, look, I just don't, I like, that's crazy to me. Like, again, even politics aside, even the thousands of like lost jobs aside, like, I don't know, man. As like, that just terrifies me as like a driver. Like, I don't, like,
yeah, 100%. Forget about as a passenger.
Yeah.
I mean, forget about it. Like, okay, cool. So obviously, he does that. What are some of the other great things he's doing for the California worker?
Well, so yeah, that was like a couple weeks ago. That was like late September. And then within the last week, he's done two things back to back. One of them is, you just mentioned Prop 22. That was, you know, to let Uber and DoorDash and Lyft and all these companies classify their workers as contractors instead of employees, so they, you know, they don't have to, you know, minimum wage benefits, you know, all that
stuff. By the way, there are people who might want to be classified as contractors, people who have their own full-time job already, where it's like, oh, like, I can do this thing for you on the side. Instead of paying me those bennies, just pay me up front. Just pay me the money that you was going to put into those bennies, put into this, put into that. I'm going to do my W-9. There is a category of worker that makes sense for, but you can't tell me it makes sense for every single gig economy worker that exists. That's absurd.
No. And like, honestly, if you're, you know, you wouldn't really get benefits. I mean, if you're just working like a limited number of hours as a part-time employee anyway. So, no, it's really obvious what was going on there. Well, after Dianne Feinstein finally died, I'm not sure how they could tell, but
this was fantastic. This is my personal favorite because we just tying it into a nice bowl with the education reform thing that you mentioned.
Like, after Feinstein died, Newsom's appointment, Butler for her replacement, actually worked as like a corporate consultant. She was working with Uber when they were getting Prop 22 passed. And it's kind of amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, this is
funny how that works. It's interesting.
Yeah. And like, it's a very typical Newsom thing that, you know, he made a big deal beforehand before we knew who was going to be about saying, you know, that he was going to appoint a black woman, which is kind of like, which should be kind of insulting because it's like, what, like all black women are interchangeable. Like it doesn't really matter what any particular woman stands for or what interest she represents.
To these fucks. Yeah.
It's all just the same. Like, so, so people were, a lot of people were like, oh, okay, well, why don't you appoint Barbara Lee? She's a black woman. She used to be in Congress, you know, she's already clearly
anti-imperial, anti-war. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
she's clearly interested in the seat. Yeah. Like you're saying, she's the only person in Congress who had the guts to vote against the war in Afghanistan, you know, in 2001. That would have been great, but nope. Instead in fact, somebody who worked with Uber on getting Prop 22 passed. And it was also amazing because a lot of the mainstream press like headlines, you'll see refer to her as a former labor leader, which is true, but it's super misleading because it's like, yeah, what's she been doing since then?
Yeah.
You know, she switched sides.
Yeah, she switched sides. She went from being on the side of the workers to being on the side of management, whose job is to fuck workers at every single turn. The reason why this is important, obviously, is because this guy has self-fashioned himself as sort of the future standard bearer of the Democratic Party writ large. And it feels like it's a bit self-appointed. I think I shouldn't say that it's fully self-appointed. Yeah. I think there is a faction of the consultant class and those kinds of people that absolutely love Gavin Newsom. He's going to check all the boxes that these artificial boxes. He's got a full set of hair. He can speak well publicly. You know, he's going to do all of the socially conscious, quote unquote, stuff. He's going to perform that quite well while also being completely enmeshed within the capital class of California and the country writ large. Like, of course, again, like I remember this guy during the pandemic as the guy who kept Napa Valley open during the pandemic. Yo, California was one of the strictest COVID states. And it was like, damn, why is Napa still open? Oh yeah, that's right, he owns a vineyard. Oh yeah, that's right, he's blah, blah. It was like a day, I forget how long it was after he handed down the edict that, you know, they would shut down the whole state of California, shelter in place, blah, blah, blah. He was having a fundraiser at the goddamn French Laundry, which if those of you who don't know, it's like a tasting menu of 1,000 person ahead.
Well, and the thing, I saw a friend, Anna Kasparian, pointed this out yesterday in the Young Turks. Like, the headline everybody got out of that was, oh, look, here's Newsom being a hypocrite and like going out and like dining, you know, in person, you know, when you're not supposed to do that because of COVID. Fair enough. That's true. But like the much bigger deals, who he was doing it with, which were these like lobbyists, you know, like
of course
the people who were.
It's just gross.
Yeah, these are the people who he was working with to basically help PG&E, the utility company that has been found like legally culpable for the California wildfires because they. You know, extreme negligence, you know, they didn't update their equipment. They knew was, you know, like they knew what the problem was. It was cheaper not to deal with it, roll the dice. And these are the people he was working with to basically systematically rewrite the rules to make it harder to get the money that PG&E owes wildfire victims for compensation to, you know, that they had to pay out less or they could pass it on to the, you know, consumer. So that's like a whole thing.
It's just the gross. It's just gross.
It is. And, you know, like not for nothing. PG&E, was a big donor to his original campaign, for governor. But yeah, I mean, then like we haven't even done what to my mind is, maybe the worst of all of these, which is last week he vetoed, a law that would have extended unemployment benefits to striking
workers. Yep.
Exactly, right? So this is basically, you know, I'm sure people watching this will remember you know, early in the writer's strike, there was this notorious quote that was going around from one of the studio bosses.
People assumed it was Bob Iger.
Yeah.
Chairman and CEO of Disney. Yep.
Said, well, the long-term play here is to hold out until writers start losing their apartments and, you know, losing their houses. And fortunately, in that case, that didn't happen. But this is precisely what would help protect workers from bosses doing that strategy, that it's like, oh, that's fine. We'll just, you know, we'll just outlast you until you're so desperate that you'll come back to the table and like just take whatever we choose to give you. And I mean, that, like, if this guy, you know, and I understand, you know, if we're going to totally, you know, do balls and strikes here, he did sign something that, that's going to increase wages for fast food workers. That's good. Although I also point out in the article, it has some weird exemptions built into it for the sake of like buying off industry opposition. Like any chain that makes its own bread for some reason is exempted from the higher wages. So if you work at Panera,
it's like you work even harder. You should be getting even. You baking the bread. Baking the bread and making the dough rise, like, come on now.
Yeah, I would think so. But yeah, but like this, like just the fact that he wouldn't have even had to do anything, like all he had to do, I mean, this had already passed. Like this would be a huge thing for like the collective bargaining power of workers in California, and literally all he had to do was just not veto it, right? And but then he, you know, he does, and you know, he has this I mean, his only argument for it is this kind of lame, like, you know, it's like, well, you know, the unemployment insurance system already costs a lot of money, so you know, we shouldn't expand it. Like, you know, come on, that's not why.
Yeah, and so this is the great, and again, there are people who are screaming about Joe Biden shouldn't run. Yeah. He's quote-unquote behind in the polls right now against sure. Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. And this is the fucking clown show that they want to put forward.
Well, and he obviously, you know, I mean, he obviously wants it. He's made that pretty clear.
Yeah, he's debating Ron DeSantis because they're just so, like, there's just such stout intellectuals, Ben. Like, the public needs to just hear them expound upon all of the ills of society and how they would propose that we fix them by, you know, screwing workers at every single turn, and you know, making sure we deregulate the shit out of just what we got left. It's quite comical. And you know, I've read some stories about certain people in the party's not feeling what he's doing. Yeah. His not so subtle approach. Cause for people, obviously everybody knows this. You win the fucking presidency, you're an incumbent, you run. You know, that's just how the party goes. Like that's just how it goes. Like what's his name? Ted Kennedy. He went against that. I think that was Jimmy Carter. He did that too.
Yeah, 1980. Yeah,
in 1980, which is just unprecedented to just go up against an incumbent. But like pretty much since, it's never happened again.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I'm trying to think. I think the only time it's happened since then, I think that was the last time on the Democratic side. I think the only time on the Republican side was like George Bush Sr. got like a primary challenge from Pat Buchanan.
Got you. Yes. You know,
but like, yeah, it's been a very long time on either end.
And again, first of all, there's a lot of built-in advantages to being the incumbent. And I think, you know, it's a long time until November of next year. Right. And I think Biden could do a bunch of shit that might be able to curry him some favor with voters. And I think at best right now you could say, oh, Donald Trump's 50-50 with him, right? But the idea that like, oh, there's this, all of these candidates that the Dems could just throw out there that would be so amazing and engender all of this great will from the people, I find it to be laughable. Gavin Newsom being chief among them.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. I mean, like, if you think back to why Biden won in the first place, like, okay, the like regular Dems had to find somebody to rally behind so it wouldn't be Bernie. You know, can't have that, right? That's the got to avoid that at all costs. But like, why was it Biden? Why wasn't it, you know, Mayor Pete or, you know, Kamala, what, you know, one of these people? It's like, I guess she'd already dropped out, but whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, the, it's like part of the problem is that most of the rest of the big Dems are just like so unappealing. Like, you know, Biden,
of a different time, bro. Yeah. He became a Democrat before they got consultant cocksuckered to death. Like everybody else is just straight up. You just know they are just, all they do is talk to these consultant types. They're not human beings in public. Yeah, they're just not. Mayor Pete is not a human being in public in his affect at all. Neither is Kamala Harris. That's why everybody hates her and she can't gain no traction. She would be the obvious pick.
Of course.
She's so inept.
Yeah.
She's so obviously unattractive. Gavin Newsom, like, who else you want to throw out there? I think Elizabeth Warren used to have some level of appeal, especially with certain type of progressives. I used to be one of those type of people that was like, nah, like CFPB, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And realistically, like, she's been coasting on that CFPB shit for 15 years at this point. It's kind of a fucking joke. There's nobody. You know, a guy that I would like to see get in there, who for whatever reason, I don't know why, he has no interest in it, is Sherrod Brown.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I would love to see Sherrod Brown get in there. He's got actual union bona fides, working class bona fides. He's a Midwest guy, a normal seeming fucking guy. But for whatever reason, he has just no interest in this shit.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, Fetterman hadn't had a stroke, who knows, you know.
I know.
There are exceptions here and there. I mean, I guess, I think as far as, like, just sort of regular centrist Dems, I think Gretchen Whitmer seems less like she was grown in a lab than a lot of them do, But yeah, I mean, like, Newsom is exactly the kind of guy who a lot of Democrats would try to put out, because it's like, you know, because he appeals to them, and it sort of doesn't seem to occur to them that. And
I get it. Like, the average suburban Dem voter, yeah, they're going to go for it. They don't give a fuck. Affluent, college educated, suburban Democrat. Like, of course, they'll be like, yeah, I could go for that. But that's not, like, bro, like, that's not the fringe Democratic Party voter, bro.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally right. Like, there's no, I think that, yeah, I mean, Joe Biden, like, part of the appeal of Joe Biden is that, look, as awful as his record was before he ran for president, you know, he was like the, you know, senator from MasterCard, you know, and voted for the Iraq War and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of affect, he seemed like a regular person.
Yes.
I even think, he kind of gestured in the direction of caring about the problems of ordinary people. And even, like, I don't know. I even remember, like, that moment when somebody asked him during the campaign, how many genders are there? And he was like, I don't know, at least three. Like, it was kind of perfect, because it was like, what it communicated is, it's like, look, I'm not a bigot or an asshole. I'm not out to make life harder for anybody. But also,
I don't understand this shit, and I'm good.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm good. I'm out of it.
Probably the perfect thing to communicate, from that position. Like, just like, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Just don't, you know, like, I'm not interested in whatever you guys are fighting about right now. You know, like, skip me with it. And yeah, I think that was a really effective message. Whereas, like, somebody like Newsom, I mean, there's a reason why he wants to debate Ron DeSantis.
that, oh God, it's so easy.
Yeah.
It's just so easy.
And like debating, because he's obsessed with all the same stuff that Ron DeSantis is obsessed with. And, you know, so they get to spend, you know, 90 minutes talking about all their favorite subjects with each other. And, you know, it's not like Ron DeSantis is going to ask him why he vetoed unemployment benefits for striking workers.
Of course not. Of course not. That shit wouldn't even come up, because Ron DeSantis isn't even like a Josh Hawley type who like fakes the funk. He's just straight up just a corporatist elite bastard. That's what he is. But okay, I guess we've kind of beat up on Gavin Newsom's handsome body long enough. I do want to get into this Ibrahim Kendi X thing and the Anti-Racist Institute at Boston College. You have a better familiarity of this guy's background and his ascendance to prominence in all of these liberal and elite spaces of academia. What do you know about his ascent to the space that he got? Just so we can let the listeners and viewers understand, get a certain understanding of this Ibrahim Kendi X guy and this how to be an anti-racist craze that happened 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading, so our friends Jason Miles and Gene Bajelon are writing an article about it, and I was just reading that.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
And, you know, I mean, one of the things that strikes me as, I don't know, maybe a little bit funny about this guy is that he, you know, from like for the way he talks, you would think that, you know, that he really had some experience of the sort of
the struggle, the black struggle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But,
well, you know, Ben, once you're black, you're going to struggle, you know, okay, even when you're upper middle class or rich. Oh, when you're rich, you struggle the most. Oh, you got family members asking you for money. Oh, your life is so hard when you're black, man. Trust me.
Yeah.
No matter what. Okay.
Yeah. His, I mean, apparently his, so, Henry Rogers, by the way, is his birth name. His mom, Carol Rogers, I looked this up, is described as a former business analyst for a healthcare organization. Mm. His dad is a tax accountant. You know, this is
like well-to-do folks, folks.
Yeah, which is like, you know, the reason I'm bringing that up is not that, like, you know, is not that, you know, I hold it against him that, you know, he comes from a comfortable background. That's fine. Can't control that. It's like, it's not good in some way to have, like, grown up struggling. It's, you know, that's all fine, right? You know, but I think there is a certain absurdity to the fact that there, you know, that this guy can sort of change his name to the most, like, black power sounding thing that, you know, that he can think of, and he can position himself the way that he ended up positioning himself. And, you know, and it's and there are so many people who are willing to just, like, defer to him. It's like, oh, this guy, you know, this guy really, you know, must really know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that he's one of a couple of people who, I mean, I'm trying to come up with a more charitable word than grifters, but
it's a grift. And again, because we want to talk about the substance of the of shit that got him, made him so popular. This concept of anti-racism, which essentially, and Ben is the philosophy guy, so you can tell me if I'm getting this right or wrong. Essentially, it means that it's not enough to be passively not racist.
Right, exactly.
You have to be actively anti-racist.
Yeah.
And in the book, did you read the book, or did you just read some excerpts, or what
was it? I've read some excerpts. I haven't read, so he wrote a couple of, so the How to Be an Anti-Racist is one of the big ones, and what was the other one? There was Stamped from the Beginning, the Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. I mean, it's kind of funny, right? That it's like the people who, in some ways, like the biggest winners from the summer of 2020
are the right wingers.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, but people like Kendi or Robin DiAngelo, who had these sort of very accessible. They sort of sounded just edgy enough to kind of capture the mood of the time, books that people could read and stuff that people could, you know, could donate to.
White Fragility. Remember that one?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Robin DiAngelo would go around basically your boss would hire her to yell at you at work. I mean, that's what that gets down to.
It's crazy. Wife, I got hired by a new company in 2021. There was still this sort of in the ether, this idea that corporations needed racial teaching shit. And bro, some of the seminars that I sat through, I was like, I can't believe our company paid y'all to do this, bro.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy. Like, I could talk to my coworkers tomorrow and be like, yo, It's all you got to do. Like, don't be an asshole. Engage your coworkers in, like, they are.
But see, don't be an asshole. That makes it sound like it's okay to just be a non-racist. It turns out you have to be an
anti-racist, which is just, by the way, in the book, he called, like, Frederick Douglass is a racist. And, like, it's like he makes all of these radical claims to get, like, all this attention. And essentially, you know, of course, the sort of hysteria around 2020 and 2021, you know, they're finding people, the whites, the elite whites are trying to find ways to atone for this. It's like blacks, whites, Latinos are on the streets, and everybody is coming to this, confronting this essential truth. Although I don't even know if it's an essential truth. This is a truth that, you know, minorities and all kinds of people have been put upon in America.
Yeah.
And we need to try to do something about it. And who do we turn to? A motherfucker who's, you know, upper middle class black. It's like the classic elite capture.
Yeah, which is the, so, I mean, the fact that he, I mean, again, I think that, like, the fact that, you know, he does come from this background is relevant only because it's you know, like, it just shows how interested it is that, like, nobody's really making that distinction, right? That they,
yes,
like, there's so much of what he's talking about. Like, his whole deal is that anything, like, any policy or anything that that sort of generates worse outcomes for black people than white people is racist. And so that's what we need to be focused on. So he has this wacky proposal for, like, there needs to be, like, a federal department of anti-racism with, like, you know, people who are empowered to, you know, like, overturn anything that has racist effects and have, and, you know, ban, you know, anybody from having racist ideas.
Mind you, and again, as always, that there's never a distinction as to which black people is disproportionately affecting.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, because it's like, when you say it's disproportionately affecting, like, you're talking about percentages, right? But, like, if you're, but the big distinction that I would make is, okay, like, what's the goal? Right? Like, what do we actually want to have happen? Is it just that we want there to be, like, the right percentages of everybody at every step in the economic ladder comes from the right groups? Is that what we want? Right? Because, like,
that's what elite blacks want.
Yeah, because
they want to walk into their boardroom and they want to see 12% black people in there.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all they want.
Yeah, because, like, that's not actually going to help, like, the overwhelming majority of black people, right? Because even if you do have 12% black people in the boardroom, right, they, you know, overwhelming majority of black people aren't going to be sitting on corporate boards, just like the overwhelming majority of white people aren't. And this is, I always think about, there's this line, you know, Adolf Reed has this article where he talks about going on some black nationalist radio show and argue with the host. And he makes the point that most of the racial wealth gap is at the top. And the host says, but white people have so much more collective wealth than black people. And Reed kind of makes fun of it. He says, well, hold on, tell me more about this collective wealth. Like, how does this work? If you're, like, a waitress in Oklahoma who's having trouble making rent, can you hit up Elon Musk for a donation from the white collective?
No. it's just an absurd framing of, you know, how society has organized itself. And again, we're bringing this up just to show you, like, what the grift was. It's like, again, this is something like, again, this is Ben's world, you know, these, If you're of academia, you write a paper, it gets peer reviewed, like, people come and argue against it, and you have to defend this paper that you wrote, these ideas that you've espoused. Like, there's like a rigorous process that absolutely never happened with this guy. And then, of course, the freaking liberal elites, they were like, yo, we got to do something about George Floyd and this and that.
That's the whole thing, because people were doing this And we should say it too. I mean, if the grifter thing earlier sounded too harsh, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the amount of money that went into
yes, and that's what I was going to say
versus what's left now.
Yes, and the actual work that was done. I think it was something like $42 million they've burned through.
Yeah,
$42 million they burned through, guys. Laid off a bunch of people at the research center. They produced no work. Because this was supposed to be the center to solve racism, Ben, at Boston College. And,
and this is the thing. Like, this sort of correct premise that these people have is that, obviously, look, I mean, America was, at the time that, like, I don't know, our parents were growing up, right? Like, America was an apartheid country. Like, that's true.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. What that means, among other things, is that how, like, economic inequality is distributed, like, that's not just going to go away, like, in a generation or two. You know, that doesn't work that way. So, like, they're not wrong about the disparities. Like, they're right about the disparities. But then the question is, well, again, what are you going to do about it, and what's the goal? And if, you know, is the goal the 12% Black representation on the board of directors of Lockheed Martin, or is the goal to have a more equal society, that, like, just to have the floor be raised for everybody? And of course, that second one, and, you know, by the way, like, it's worth remembering, you know, because, you know, all we keep talking about that summer of 2020, that all of this happened after the murder of George Floyd. Well, you know, George Floyd was a laid off worker who was killed by the cops after he was apprehended for trying to pass a bad 20 at a grocery store. And this is, like, I mean the thing think about there is, like, yeah, look, there's a reason why that kind of brutal version of policing happened, and mass incarceration and all that stuff. But if your whole analysis of it is that there's, like, this sort of eternal racial dynamics that are just, like, throughout American history, and there's basically no difference, you know, that if we're talking about, you know, 1850 or 1950 or 2020, you know, it's all the same thing. I think you're going to be missing a lot. I think that the real thing, like, is stuff that people like Cedric Johnson write about, that, you know, after, like, starting in the 70s, there was kind of a crossroads where one way to sort of manage poverty and all the social ills that come with poverty would have been to expand the great society welfare state that had started under LBJ.
Another way was to lock motherfuckers up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, that one is a lot cheaper and it's a lot easier politically, you know? Yeah. So that's what they did. Right. And this is, you know, like, but sort of talking about that as primarily an issue about race, or even as primarily an issue about policing, I think misses a lot of the point that, like, if you live in a middle-class neighborhood, you probably have a pretty good relationship with the police, right?
I mean, you definitely do, Ben.
Yeah.
You definitely do. It's not probably. Ugh. You definitely do, no matter what your race is.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's period. Now, you know, if you're a black yuppie and you gentrifying, I would argue you still, even as a black gentrifier, you still have a pretty decent relationship with the cops.
Yeah.
You know, and why the fuck do you think that is? It's absolutely not because you're black.
No,
or you're not. We know why that is.
Exactly, right? It's like, so this is all, like, all of this stuff is downstream of all this massive economic inequality. And yeah, the economic inequality is definitely distributed in racially disparate ways. That's true. But, like, but the question is, what do we want? Do we want, like, a sort of racially correct version of economic inequality, where you know you have the the right numbers of each group at each at each level, or is what we want to like attack the economic inequality itself? Because you know, even in Ibram X. Kendi terms, you know, the when you talk about the you're judging things by their effective impact, it's like, well, look, I know which one of those things is going to benefit more Black people than the other one, right? Like, it's, I mean, it's...
Well, just to bring it all the way to the top, because I think this is all of a piece. The nonsense, the Gavin Newsom version of liberalism is the same thing that allows for a figure like Ibram X. Kendi to ascend. It's the racial studies class in high school.
Yeah.
I guess vaguely that helps Black and brown people as compared to letting people pay for junior college.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, like, we know which one is going to help more Black and brown people.
Totally, right.
But we're going to, we always in the media, in culture, at Gavin Newsom's dumbass debate, I know they're going to talk about the Black, the Africana studies programs in Florida's public universities. And I know that dumb shit going to come up. And I'm not saying, obviously, we should have this shit at college. I'm not saying that.
Sure.
But, like, the idea that this is at the central of the debate about Black life in America, bro, is fucking nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I think that having...
And, you'd have to be an elite Black to think that it belongs at the forefront of what the Black struggle in America is. You can't be a normal Black person and say, yo, nah... The University of Florida Gators, man, them not having a Black studies department is really fucking shit up for the Blacks right now. No normal Black person would say that shit. It's not possible. It's not fucking possible for somebody who's divorced from that existence, somebody who may one day, you know, somebody who, say, is a garbage man in Florida, and they're worried about their kids, you know, the quality of their school. You know, they're worried about the situation in their neighborhood, yada, yada, yada. Yo, man, how far of the list is Africana studies at the public college? Nigga, please.
Whereas, look, I'm like, if you're like, you know, saving jobs for truck drivers, if you're making it easier for people to like go on strike and get more money, if you're making it harder for Uber to get away with not paying people benefits, right? It's like those things are obviously going to help working class people of all races. But like look, if we're going to do the percentages game, that's like that's like those things are going to help a higher percentage of Black people than white people.
Period. Period. Yeah. Man, listen, Ben Burgess, go read his article up in Jacobin. Gavin Newsom keeps throwing workers under the self-driving bus. Man, thank you for coming on the show, my brother. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, always.